Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 15, Killing of Danuka, the Ass Demon, text number 44. Tayor Yashoda Rohinyo Putrayo Putravatsale Yatha Kaman Yatha Kalam Vyadatam Paramashisha. Translation: Mother Yashoda and Mother Rohini, acting most affectionately toward their two sons, offered all the best things to them in response to their every desire and at the various appropriate times. Purport by the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The word Paramashisha indicates the attractive blessings of a loving mother, which include wonderful food, beautiful clothes, jewelry, toys, and constant affection. The words yatha kaman, yatha kalam indicate that although Yashoda and Rohini satisfied all the desires of their sons, Krishna and Balaram, they also properly regulated the boys' activities. In other words, they prepared wonderful food for their children, but they saw to it that the boys ate at the proper time. Similarly, their children would play at the proper time and sleep at the proper time. The word yatha kamam does not indicate that the mothers indiscriminately allow the boys to do whatever they liked, but in the proper civilized way, they showered their blessings upon their children. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments that the mothers love their sons so much that as they embrace them, they would carefully check all their limbs to see if they were healthy and strong. Mother Yashoda and Mother Rohini, acting most affectionately toward their two sons, offered all the best things to them in response to their every desire and at the various appropriate times. I'm very humbled to be here, hoping to share something Krishna consciousness with all of you. You all are so well trained. It's embarrassing to be sitting here in front of you. But Krishna consciousness is so available to everyone that even a fool like myself has been invited to speak something. So this class yesterday ended on an inquisitive note. So I thought I would fill in from there a little bit. After class, there was a discussion and there was also some research. The question was, how is it that Lord Balaram kills some demons and Krishna kills some? Was there any deciding factor? Was it just happened to happen that way, or was there something more? Well, after Lord Nrisimhadev killed Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad was, of course, very happy in one sense, but he was also a little disturbed because it was happened to be his father. So Lord Nrisimhadev, he promised to Prahlad that, okay, well, we got rid of Hiranyakashipu, the real big demon, but I'm going to give you a benediction that none of your descendants will ever be killed by me. So Prahlad's son, one of his sons, Virochana, he had a son, Bali Maharaj, And Bali Maharaj had two, well, maybe many more, but at least two that we were able to find out here. And Banasura, famous Banasura. Banasura was a demon, from, you know, in the written Krishna book. He was a demon. He had a thousand arms, and he was just wanting to play 500 mrudangas or smash mountains, something. He had all these arms. He wanted to do something. And anyway, he was itching for a fight, and he was guided by Lord Shiva. Actually, the only one worth fighting is Krishna. So him and Krishna got into this big fight. And in the course of the fight, Krishna was wiping him out pretty seriously. He was cutting off arms very rapidly. He had 1,000 arms, and he got down to cut off 996 arms, and he left 4 arms. He didn't kill him. And that was one of the reasons he didn't kill him was, well, the reason is because he had promised Prahlad Maharaj. So there was another son of Bali Maharaj, Sahasisha or something to that effect, some name like that. Anyway, he was also a demon, and his great propensity was to enjoy with women. So he organized this really big party, and he invited 10,000 ladies that he would enjoy with. And he figured, let me go to the mountains where I won't bother anybody. So he went to the mountains, and there he had this incredible party, and he was enjoying 10,000 girls. Unfortunately, his neighbor in the mountains was this very famous sage, Durvasa Muni, who has a history of getting angry when he feels offended. As you know from the Srimad Bhagavatam, he was so offended by Ambarish Maharaj, who had simply taken some charanamrita at an inappropriate time, that he pulled out some of his hair and created this huge demon to kill Ambarish. And of course, Krishna protected, you know the story, Krishna protected him. But Sir Durvasa Muni has a tendency to get very angry. So his neighbor was Durvasa Muni. When Durvasa Muni heard all this commotion, he became very agitated, and he cursed this Sahasirsha, whatever his name is, well, that you are acting just like an ass. Become an ass. He was cursed. Become an ass. In your next life, or whenever, 400,000 years from now, when you're playing around like an ass, and then we heard this, oh my God, I've been cursed. So he said, but there's one good thing about this curse is that in 400,000 years from now, you will be killed by Lord Balaram in Mathura. So those are two reasons why this Danu, so he became Danukasura, actually, you know, that's who he became Danukasura in his next life, so therefore he could not be killed by Krishna. He had to be killed by Balaram because he was cursed by Durvasa Muni to be killed by Balaram, and he was a descendant of Bali Maharaj. There was another reason there, and I'm hoping, do you remember the third reason? That Radha Swami was explaining after class. He was explaining that some guy, if I'm right, Danukasura represents, well, he's an ass. He represents complete ignorance. That's the classic example. If you want to insult somebody for being ignorant, you'd call them an ass. And Prabhupada, of course, gave the famous example that the ass is working so hard for some grass that's just out in front of him. He's got the carrot. He's just going for a little sense gratification. He's working so hard. He carries huge burdens on his back. That's the typical example of an ass, an uneducated person, thinking I have to work so hard to maintain this material body, when actually the goal of life is nothing to do with this material body. The goal of life is to love Krishna, to go back to the spiritual world. So, anyway, because he represents ignorance, Lord Balaram is the original guru, the Adi Guru, the original spiritual master. So therefore, Lord Balaram chose to, the spiritual master, we say, Om Agyanatim Anandasya, before the class. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, the spiritual master, force opened my eyes. So, spiritual master, Lord Balaram, took that took that opportunity to deliver Dhenukasura. So this whole chapter, actually, if you read this chapter fully, we were taking it piece by piece, but this whole chapter is actually an incredibly sweet chapter. It's in Krishna book, and Prabhupada, you know, the way that it flows through Krishna book. But it's an incredibly sweet chapter because actually the whole picture of Vrindavan is there. The whole picture of where we want to be, somewhere in that picture of the spiritual sky of Vrindavan. Everything's there. The pastime starts out with Krishna, you know, all the living entities of Vrindavan are having a relationship with Krishna. The bees are humming, and Krishna's appreciating their sound. In fact, you know, they're actually chanting his glories. And of course, he was talking to Balaram how actually they're chanting your glories. Just hear the bees chanting your glories. The trees, they're walking, Krishna and Balaram are walking through the forest. The trees are bowing down. They're laden with fruits and flowers. And Krishna's explained about, oh, just see, they're offering their fruits and flowers to you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So many birds are singing. So many flowers are blooming. The wind is the breeze. Everything is being described. How it is giving pleasure to Krishna, right? The whole atmosphere of Vrindavan, and gradually, you know, the cows are introduced to the scene, and the cowherd boys, and actually we go through this whole these last few verses. The last few verses are describing these intimate relationships with Krishna. The whole rasas, all the rasas are being described in this chapter in a summary form. When Prabhupada was chanting, well, one time in Gorakhpur, he was chanting this song before class, Srimad Bhagavatam class, you know, this Jai Radha Madhava. He was singing, you know, with great devotion. And he went into a trance. And during the trance, you know, it's hard to say what was going on, but when he got out of the trance, all the devotees were stopped, and he said, just chant Hare Krishna. Later on, Prabhupada explained that this song, Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, everything is there. Everything is there. All of Vrindavan there. Krishna is there with the gopis, Srimati Radharani, the cows, Govardhan Hill, the Jamuna, the bushes of Vrindavan. It's all there. So similarly, in this chapter, this whole atmosphere of Vrindavan is being described very, very sweetly. How the all living beings are having relationship with Krishna. The birds, the trees, the demigods. These last three verses we hear, last three or four verses, we hear how when Krishna had defeated this demon, you know, Krishna was the hero of all the cowherd boys. When he defeated this demon, they were all chanting his glories, walking behind him, and they were relishing their relationship with Krishna. They didn't really think that Krishna was that great. They thought Krishna was cool, as we say in America. They thought Krishna was cool. They didn't really think he was great, because why? In their relationship with Krishna, they were defeating Krishna, you know, wrestling with him and defeating him. And sometimes, you know, defeating him in arguments, so many things in their play as cowherd boys. And because Yoga Maya, you know, is instrumental for covering the cowherd boys and the gopis. The next one that's described after yesterday's verse was describing the gopis, how their eyes were, what is it? With their bee-like eyes, they were searching out the honey of Krishna's face. You know, so they didn't ever think of Krishna as the Supreme Lord. They only thought of Krishna as the most beautiful, attractive boy, their lover. That's how they saw Krishna. They were covered by this yoga maya to have this intimate, loving relationship. And this is the, you know, Vrindavan life, or the Braj bhakti that, you know, is being described verse after verse in these 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, and that's meant to attract the living beings who are suffering in this world. We're having all these relations. We're having our lovers. We're having our friends. We're having our family. But it's all what they call perverted reflection. There's no real enjoyment there. There's no real satisfaction. It ultimately ends up in frustration and pain. That's the material relationship. No matter how much we love somebody, when they die, we are crushed. We are saddened. You know, it's a fact of nature. You know, so. But so therefore, Krishna exhibits these pastimes to show this eternal relationship. These rasas are being described here. And so today's class is talking about, you know, having Krishna as your child, Mother Yashoda and Mother Rohini. Now, the verse yesterday in the purport, it was explaining that the description of the gopis, the way they were relating to Krishna, the way they were glancing at him, the way Krishna was glancing back, it was just the way boys and girls in this world, or lovers, or, you know, loving people, romantic affairs go on in this world. Of course, the difference is that Krishna is in the center. When Krishna is in the center, the whole thing becomes transcendental, becomes sweet, you know, becomes eternal. It's one of the five rasas. So similarly here, we're hearing how the mothers of Krishna and Balaram, what they were doing. They were just being mothers. You know, everything that's being described here is not so extraordinary. You know, they were very affectionate toward their children. They're offering the best things. In the purport, it says giving beautiful clothes, toys, constant affection, jewelry. You know, this is nothing extraordinary. And of course, the mother's awareness of her children is so heightened. You know, from time of conception, the child is in the womb. You know, right, part of the mother's body. As soon as the child comes out, the need of the child for the mother to feed the child, to protect the child, is so intense. The bond is very, 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 very tight, as you say, you know. And therefore Prabhupada said that if there's any kind of unconditional love in this world, it's the closest thing we can get to the love that we're trying to achieve between the living being and Krishna is the love of the mother toward the child. Because it's unconditional. It's not a job anybody will sign up for, generally. I mean, it's not, you know, you don't get paid, you don't have any hours, you know, it's a 24/7 job, you're on emergency call, you know, you have to tolerate a noisy environment, a noisy work environment, child crying. So, you know, It's a thankless task. The child, after you feed your child, the child's not thanking you. You know, the child's probably just burping or something, or getting sick, you know, from air in the stomach. You know, so for a mother, it's a thankless task. But it's close to being unconditional love as you can get in this material world. But even it's become in today's society due to the influence of Kali Yuga. Even just the ordinary dealings, the normal dealings between mother and child, people are forgetting, or it's becoming lost, you know. And therefore, mothers put their child in a you know, they from the worst thing, you know, aborting their child, or giving their child away at birth, or throwing the child in the garbage at birth, or, you know, when a mother feels that her career is more important than the child, puts the child with somebody else. So all these things are, you know, deteriorating this natural bond. And it has an effect. The effect of proper motherhood on a child is the child grows properly. There's been studies for the negative effects. If a child's neglected, you know, they've taken brain scans of a child, that are, some child that's neglected, some child that's been nurtured, show how the brain shrinks. Or there was a study in Romania, how they had these children, these orphans in a nursery, and even though the nurseries were very nicely clean and regulated, because the children didn't get any personal attention from their mother, they they became autistic, and they became schizophrenic, and their heads were misshapen. So many things happened. Of course, that's on the negative side. On the positive side, you know, learning how to love, you know, that's where it starts. We learn how to love from our mother, you know. If our mother loves us, then we love back, and we love others from that. So these things that Rohini, Yashoda, this is ordinary motherhood, but it was transcendental because it's to Krishna. I mean, we hear about Prabhupada's upbringing, how Prabhupada was so loved by his mother. His mother was constantly thinking of how to protect little Abai. You know, she would do all these little rituals. She put a little piece of saliva on his forehead every time he went out. One time she milked some blood from her breast and she offered it to the demigods and prayed for the protection of her son. One time she took a vow to eat with her left hand until her son noticed, thinking that, okay, as long as he doesn't ask about it, that means he'll keep living, you know? So she had all these things. She put an iron bangle around his ankle and with mantras. So Prabhupada was explaining that just one time when he was telling these stories of his childhood, he was explaining that just like Mother Yashoda, she would chant various mantras for the protection of her son. What Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, Sarva Dharma Prishaja, Mamekam Sharanam Raja, Hum Tum Tava Pabhavya Moksham Isha Map Sucha. Krishna says, I'll give protection to anyone who surrenders to me. He's giving protection to everyone. But Mother Yashoda, her love, her motherly affection is that she's going to give protection to her child. And Prabhupada was explaining how, you know, just like his mother was doing this to him, Mother Yashoda was doing that for Krishna. But we'd be chanting these mantras, and then when Krishna would come back from the pasturing ground, and he kills some demon, Mother Yashoda, what were her thoughts? My mantras worked. Just see the potency of my mantras. They worked. He was protected and he killed the demon. She's taking credit for herself, for her, you know, her chanting of the mantras. So this was her mood. This is the motherly affection, you know, Vatsalya Ras. So we hear in the same chapter when Krishna killed Putana after he was playing on the gigantic demon's breast. Immediately, Mother Yashoda brought, you know, a cow's tail was circumambulating baby Krishna with the cow tail, bringing dust from the hooves of the calves. She bathed Krishna with cow urine, all the while chanting different mantras for each part of his limb. Chanting different names of Lord Vishnu. She was taking the names of Lord Vishnu and the cow products in order to pray for the protection of her child. So, you know, this is the motherly mood. Protection and affection. Protection, affection, and education. Actually, the mother, in one sense, is the first guru of the child, because the mother teaches. So much when the father's not there, mother's teaching so much what needs to be done, what needs not to be done. And so what a role she has. So Mother Rohini, Mother Yashoda had this, you know, special relationship with Krishna. It's not ordinary becoming the mother of Krishna. But by following the process of bhakti yoga, these relationships, we read Nectar of Devotion, we see these relationships, these primary relationships with Krishna, this is the goal, to enter into this loving relationship with Krishna, to reawaken our original loving relationship with Krishna. So the acharyas have given a very, you know, scientific process for doing that. We can't jump over. We can't forget to follow the principles of Krishna consciousness, the basic principles of Krishna consciousness. Because entering into these relationships with Krishna comes only after complete purification of the heart, chaito darpana marjanam. When the heart is completely purified, then our relationship with Krishna is revealed. And not only through following the process of bhakti yoga, but this relationship with Krishna, these intimate relationships with Krishna is found in the residence of Vrindavan. These are a result of, in this age, through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. It cannot be given directly. We have to please Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya's mission is to glorify and spread the holy name of the Lord. So to the degree that we are dedicating ourselves to the mission of Lord Chaitanya, that's to the degree Lord Chaitanya is going to reciprocate with our endeavor and let us enter into these loving relationships with Krishna, these high loving relationships with Krishna. So anyone else would like to add, subtract, or comment on this verse and purport? Any questions, Malati?
Sorry that I don't remember the verse, but nice description that you just gave of Rohini and Mother Yasoda. There was a nice instruction from Srila Prabhupada in one purport of Bhagavatam that he says, it was a very careful description of her working so hard, how the flowers were loosened, the garments were loosened, it slackened, etc. So he said, we should read this description carefully. But we shouldn't try to imitate Mother Yasoda. We should follow in her footsteps. And this way we can get this Vatsalya Ras.
Yeah, Mother Yasoda's love for Krishna was so intense that it's described so many places how just when she was thinking of Krishna or when she was seeing Krishna or when she wasn't seeing Krishna, so many examples of this, that milk would flow from her breasts profusely, so much so that it would be wetting the lower part of her sari. So, you know, this kind of love is extraordinary, but you know, this is what we aspire to. This is why we hear these beautiful pastimes of Krishna with his devotees. Because this gives us impetus to enter in. And Krishna is so kind that he makes these relationships available, not just to his mother Yashoda, but all the residents of Braj, all the women of, many of the women of Braj, they also had access to having this parental ras with Krishna. In fact, in the villages, you know, this tends to be. And of course, we know from, it was being described yesterday, how when Krishna expanded himself, as one of the as the boys, the cowherd boys, then all the mothers were able to give their breast milk to Krishna through that expansion. So, you know, this description of this chapter, the killing of Dhenukasura, and when you see how Krishna's walking through the whole forest and performing his pastimes, taking care of the cows and fighting with the demons, everything's there. And, you know, but where are we? You know, where do we fit in? How do we fit into some service to Krishna? That's why we're chanting Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. We're begging to somewhere fit into this pastimes of Krishna. As a servant, all the relationships were there. They had some cowherd boys are fanning Krishna, you know. Some that maybe weren't so close to Krishna were fanning him. Cowherd boys as friends, Krishna's parents, mothers, as Krishna's parents, and the gopis, and the inanimate objects were also giving. They're also there. There's no inanimate objects actually in the spiritual world. There's no inanimate objects. Even if you become, the great devotees were praying to become grass or rocks in Vrindavan so they could be stepped on, you know, to to get the dust of Krishna on their feet. So this is the call of our bhakti path, to become very insignificant piece of dust at the lotus feet of Krishna. Mataji?
I'm not going to ask a question. I'm just going to make a comment. I was just thinking how instructive this verse is for us as sadhakas, how to raise our children, because it's given there, yatha kamam, yatha kalam, according to proper time. The mothers were very conscientious of fulfilling all their needs and desires and requirements of Krishna and Balaram, putting them to rest, making sure they were fed properly. But I was thinking, you know, Mother Yashoda and Rohini, they're always absorbed, because Krishna is always that, you know, like in Vrindavan, he doesn't grow up and, you know, go to Sandipani Muni's ashram and all that. But I was thinking as parents, how even though the current of affection and protection is there for the child, how the relationship changes as the child grows older. I was thinking of my own life, how, you know, you take care of all your son's needs and you're affectionate, but then they grow up and you have to sacrifice and let them go away for their spiritual benefit. And even though, you know, you want the best for them, it's a big sacrifice. And you want protection, you want to fulfill their needs, but sometimes you have to suppress your own affection in order to exhibit a higher affection, in the sense that you have to let them go and maybe become brahmacharis. And I was thinking how difficult that is, and how fortunate, in one sense, that Mother Yashoda and Rohini didn't have to go through that. Of course, then Krishna left Vrindavan and they did have the separation. But this verse is so instructive of how we should take care of our children. I just thought there's so much we can learn from every single verse in the Bhagavatam.
There's a famous letter from Prabhupada to Arundhati, where Arundhati was saying how she wanted to give her child away because she was too busy doing pujari service. And Prabhupada told her, actually, for you, child worship is better than deity worship. Because, and then he probably explained, these children are not ordinary, these are Vaishnavs, they're born in a Vaishnav family, therefore they should be taken care of. Of course, naturally, you know, it's not that because they're Vaishnavs they should be having good motherly family. Every child, you know, it's a normal thing. The fact that it's being neglected in today's society is so unfortunate, you know, that people, you know, like some women will introduce themselves. Yeah, well, I'm only a housewife. You know, it's like the hardest job in the world, practically, and because they're embarrassed, because culture has made it now embarrassing to say that you take care of children at home and you take care of the house. You know, so things are topsy turvy because of the influence of Kali. So yeah, this is the standard, you know. You know, Prabhupada's mother Rohini, this, you know, these are, you know, we have these examples, you know, how to love children unconditionally, give affection, give guidance, give correction, you know. So, because, you know, Mother Yashoda, she took the stick, wasn't it? She just loved Krishna. She took the stick and she was showing the stick, chasing Krishna, and tying him up with rope. Or Prabhupada's mother, you know, Prabhupada was so naughty as a child, he wouldn't know how to go to school, so she hired this man called Damodar to tie him up and drag him to school. And one time she was trying to bathe Prabhupada, he was a little boy, you know, and he was fighting against it, and she was grabbing him, and he hit his head, and he was bleeding, you know, all these pastimes are there, you know. But it was everything out of love, you know. So anyway, it's natural to love our children. It's natural to love our friends. It's natural to love our parents. But we're trying to develop this higher love, because all these other loves are filled with frustration and inebrieties. You know, as much as you want to have that relationship with your child, and grows old. When he's 40 years old, you're not going to treat him like you were when he was 8 or 9. You know, he's going to grow up. It's no longer there. You know. So, you know, we're in the process of learning how to love Krishna. It's always available. It's pure, unadulterated love. Anyone else? Another comment from Malati.
The last part of that letter from Srila Prabhupada to Arundhati said, after he told her that child worship for her was, her child was in essence her deity, he said, but if you cannot take care of him, send him to me and I'll take care of him.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was if you can't take care of him, to give him to me and I'll take care of him. So that's, you know, because sometimes it's, there's a saying that Prabhupada was telling one devotee who was encouraging to preach in a foreign country, and he said, you have to have, what is it, the heart of a Bengali mother and the courage of an Englishman. So, I mean, a lot, you know, Prabhupada is, of course, a transcendental personality. At the same time, Prabhupada was brought up in a very, very loving environment, you know, with his parents, his father, and an extended family. And one of the things, there was an interview with like his great grandson Sankarshan I was reading the other day, and he was saying how Prabhupada, the environment Prabhupada brought up with it was a very loving, a lot of relatives and a lot of sharing of prasad. That was the whole atmosphere in Prabhupada's extended family. He says, so therefore Prabhupada was always in that same mood. Whenever any guest came, he would make sure, was it a malati? Make sure that before someone leaves the door, make sure the guest gets prasadam. And Prabhupada, the way he dealt with, you know, devotees, you know, so lovingly, so expertly, you know. Of course, he had love for Krishna in his heart, but he also had, you know, a tremendous loving environment, you know. So, in the same way, you know, that, you know, as we absorb love, that we can give love, basically. So in a society of devotees, we have the same opportunity. This is our family now. This is our extended family. Each devotee, you know, that we absorb love from them, and we have to give that love to others. So we might have had dysfunctional upbringings, you know. Maybe our parents weren't there for us. Maybe our parents died. Maybe our mothers were not so affectionate, whatever. But we have now this whole other family. So many mothers, so many brothers, so many uncles, that we can get affection from and share that affection. I mean, Prabhupada just didn't spread Krishna consciousness because he was giving the philosophy. Prabhupada made Krishna consciousness real to people because he gave love. There was a story of Prabhupada who was Dr. Mishra, impersonalist, right? He was an impersonalist. Prabhupada was kind of staying with him in the beginning days, or he was. He was using his studio to preach just because he probably had no facility for himself. And then he was cooking every day. He would make prasadam and give it to Dr. Mishra. Later on, Dr. Mishra remembers that he was not giving me food, he was giving me love, you know. And that's what actually brought, because he was not feeling, you know, he was ill. But so that's what Prabhupada was giving. You know, it's Krishna's love ultimately. Because Prabhupada absorbed so much love, you know, from his parents, but at the same time, he absorbed so much love from his guru and Krishna, he was able to give that love. So if you can't give what you don't have, and so when we understand that we're lacking, then we should try to fill that lack, begging the mercy of the lovers of Krishna. Yes. Microphone. Oh, you got it.
Yeah. I just was remembering something that Srila Prabhupada told Shamsundar regarding the children. He said, up until the age of 5, they require to be with the mother. So they can live without the father, but without the mother, it is like living death.
Hmm. Interesting. It's just a fact. Thank you for your kind attention. Srimad Bhagavatam Granth Raj Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.